Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the offensive discussion of the NFL. Boy, it was an offensive game of the game against the Steelers that ended the season on Sunday night. Joining me to do that again is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm good. Did you mean to say an offensive game?
It was an offensive game, yes. Very offensive okay. game. At least the offense was the non-offensive part of the game, but...
Yeah, very true.
but anyway, appreciate having you on, Gabe. We talked about some great things in the first episode. Great game from Lamar Jackson. Gabe made a great point. Maybe you want to just kind of restate it now in terms of looking at some of the barbelled outcomes and some of the higher variance results and two metrics that you might look at.
Yeah, kind of the main takeaway is a lot of, or two of the main metrics that, you know, people will look at when you're analyzing offensive performance are EPA per play, and then success rate. And they're looking at different things. And EPA per play is looking at, you know, on average, how much estimated points is this adding to your total performance. So that is kind of going to be weighted towards explosive plays, scoring plays, things like that. And then you have success rate, which is kind of more of the down to down. Are you staying on pace, on target, moving the chains? And this season, the success rate for the Ravens offense was diminished significantly compared to where it's been in years past. The explosive plays and the EPA per play has still been fairly high. And that's kind of why the offense is, you know, still pretty high performing in terms of points per game. And obviously, it's all kind of dragged down by Lamar being out. But it's kind of just the dichotomy of where the Ravens were this year and unable to sustain drives, keep, you know, long 10, 12, 15 play drives, keep time of possession like they've been doing in years past. It kind of fell off this year.
It's a great discussion there. Appreciate you bringing that up, Gabe. And we also talked about Derrick Henry relative to those metrics. And Derrick Henry's success rate was off this year, though he's, you know, still been up near the top of the rushing leaderboards. He's had a tough year for missed tackles for us as well, second worst of his career. Talked about a lot of that stuff. And also there's a whole lot in there about the amazing game Lamar Jackson had relative to his opportunity set, which unfortunately we have to talk about next, was the offensive line and how that game went. And there's been a lot of criticism of the offensive line this year in terms of it just being a millstone that is even greater than what it was actually was. I think, you know, for a lot of the season, I thought most of the problem was a generalized mediocrity in the line. They didn't really have a standout player. So if you had two terrible players and two great players and one average player, well, you'd get rid of the two terrible players and the next year you'd be fine. You'd bring in, or maybe even during the season, if you really could do it, you could be fine. But you could go and draft exactly what you need. This offensive line, much harder to do because there's so much mediocrity all the way across.
Yeah, I think if you went back and looked at, you know, all the metrics, there wasn't anything that was like a huge failure. And even some of like the punching bags from fans like Daniel Falele and Andrew Voorhees, who I think are probably on the lower side of mediocre in terms of their performance. But if you look at it on a whole, you know, it's not as bad as it appears when you just look at the ugly plays, and because the ugly plays are just so ugly that it kind of like draws more ire, I think. But on average, you know, they were able to do decently well. This game, I think, was a bit of an outlier in terms of how bad they were. It wasn't always this bad all season.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I'll give a short synopsis first, then we can get into some of the individual players. So the offensive line only gave Jackson four ample time and space opportunities, and they allowed him to be pressured 11 times. There's six ball out quicks in there. So right there, that 11-4 ratio is something you can't accept. And it's happened more than once this year that they just haven't had very many ATS opportunities. And it just a terrible, terrible set to start from. A lot of that was on the line, but not all of it. They allowed three sacks, but only half a sack was on the offensive line as I scored it. Two quarterback hits, six pressures. But there were only 21 pass plays, and that's too many total events to give up in that point. And there's still eligible receivers, free runners that are part of that as well. Ali got run over once for one of the big plays. And there are two penalties that stalled drives on the offensive line. So those are huge. We talked about some other things, but I think that's my overall, you know, theme of the thing.
Yes. Yeah, it's not a good performance. And like it was, you know, I know you do adjustments for competition and this was a game where they were going up against one of the better defensive lines. You know, I think the Steelers famously have like the highest paid defense in all of the NFL. That does also accounts for their defensive line. You know, they have a lot of veterans who are very good players still. They have a good young rookie and Harmon. So it's not something I'm looking forward to the Ravens going up against in the coming years. But it just wasn't a good performance. And it's a big reason why I think that success rate really did suffer in this game.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into the individual players?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll start going left to right. We'll start with Ronnie Stanley. You mentioned some of the issues he had, but maybe I'll just let you jump into the game that he had, which was frankly one of his worst games he's had as a Raven, probably.
Yeah, he hadn't played as badly since the very first part of the year. When he's injured before the bye week, he had some really bad play. In fact, he had a couple of games, one where he had 15 snaps and the other had 21, where he scored about 4 total points between those two games. So that was awful. He was worse during that period, but he was very bad in this game. 47 plays. He had 38 connected blocks, but he missed 3, allowed half a penetration. That's a contribution to a run for a loss. And he had parts of 4 pressures, 2 full and 2 half. And 2 of those, 1 full PD and 1 half PD, were on passes defense, including the interception that occurred was one of those. Then he allowed half a sack. And that was the only half sack the Ravens allowed. And that wasn't all, because he had an offensive holding call that started a drive. And he also had an illegal formation call that looked like it might stall a drive. It got the Ravens all the way to the brink of the season at 4th and 7 before Lamar completed the pass to Likely. That's one of the real highlights from the whole season, frankly, on the last real offensive snap. So only 20 points, 4.43 per play was what he scored. Even with an adjustment, that's an F. This is true of most of the Ravens. They didn't do much in terms of mobility blocks in this game. 2 blocks in level 2 for Stanley's. No pancakes, no pulls, no highlights in the game. So the Ravens didn't really have their power game running in a way where guards and tackles are constantly on the move. They're running tons of counters. They did run 3, but they were limited in terms of what they did. And a terrible game for Stanley. And honestly, he played so well. I've been making the point recently that I think tackle is one of the positions where the Ravens don't really have an issue going into the draft. And it's really nice after, 3 years at least of the Ravens needing an offensive tackle every year to be in a position where you don't need an offensive tackle going into the draft.
I was thinking that as one of the few highlights, I think, going into 2026, not having to worry about offensive tackle. And even behind Stanley and Rosengarten, you have Vincent, I think, his promising player that they have stashed there. So definitely a position of strength. Hopefully this is an outlier game for Stanley. He seems like he's relatively healthy, so don't think it's necessarily health related.
Great point by he's healthy again.
Yeah.
And him playing basically every snap, which basically meant Voorhees, Noteboom and Vincent didn't get on the field at all. And they handful of snaps for Vincent, but that we haven't seen that from Stanley in recent years. And since the bye, he's been healthy basically the whole time.
Yeah. Hopefully, I mean, that's a good thing going into 2026. We'll see that how his play, if it improves or if it, he's kind of maybe regressed a little bit from the 2024 performance to 2025. It was a tough game for him. I wanted to ask you quickly, the 2 pass deflections you mentioned that were kind of his area. Is that something you use in the grading?
Yes. It's a pressure event. So you have to stay engaged with the lineman in front of you, and you have to try and keep him from getting his hands up. Now you can't do it by swatting his hands, but you can do it by punching him in the stomach and making contact if he's trying to do that. Stanley also on the sack, it was just a screen pass that was set up, and he allowed, I think it was Highsmith, he pushed him past right into the passing lane. And that Lamar had to bring the ball down, try and get around Highsmith, which he did initially, and then he got pulled down from behind for a loss. So he had to take half of that sack as well. Lamar did have a chance to throw that ball away, but very unfortunate that the play got blown up basically on him pushing a guy to the outside, being overzealous in terms of maybe trying to set up for a block himself.
Yeah, I have a comment. I'll probably save it to the end of we get go through this, but it seems like overall the performance of the O-line just is on a trajectory that is not where we like to see it. And I'm curious if coaching is a big part of that. But we can move on do a DeVorhees if you want to and discuss his play. Also not a not great game for him. I think if you think about the Ravens offensive line, he might be the worst, the weakest link mm-hmm. that we've seen on them across this entire season. So we'll see what his standing is next year.
Yeah, he's I mean, there've been some things that have been perfectly okay with Voorhees this year. He had a nice, really nice run of connecting on his pulls at midseason where he had a really good, and that's gone away from him here. He hit one of three in this game. And otherwise, he had a pretty tough game. A lot of he's no match for Cameron Hayward in just the easiest sense. He had four losses at the line of scrimmage to him, had half a pressure given up and two-thirds of a quarterback hit, and he didn't play the whole game. So he was replaced for 11 snaps by Jones, which means he got 23 out of a possible 36 points, which is 0.64. Interesting player here. I gave an adjustment to reflect for Hayward. It's always lower for an interior offensive lineman. But he scored 0.68 after adjustment. That's the third time this season he's been at the very lowest point for a D. Like not D-. But there is some, if when that happens, when somebody gets this, just sneaks into the bottom of a range like multiple times like that, it you can't just look at the letter grades and average them, is my point being. So it was a D for him in this game and a tough one at that. What else to say about it? Three blocks and a little two. That's about the only thing I have to say about Vori's performance. I do imagine with two years left on his contract, he at least starts the season with the Ravens next year, right? Do you pencil him in as a starter? What do you do?
I think he will be on the roster. I don't doubt they'll move on from him. I don't know if you can pencil him in as a starter. I think offensive guard has to be one of the key positions you're looking at in the draft. Maybe not in the first round, but I think you probably want to take at least two offensive linemen. I mean, you mentioned Jones. I think he's shown some flashes of good play, but we don't really know what you have with him, right? So I think you need to kind of invest in that position. But there's some positives from Voorhees. I think in run blocking, he has some upside. But there's just also some significant technique issues that he's had all season in terms of like his hand placement, in terms of how he lets defenders get into him. And his pass protection is just really poor. But maybe with new coaching, that's something that can be improved. So I don't want to say never say never with something like that.
He's got some shape issues, obviously, and some length issues for a guard. I mean, even a guard, you got arm length limitations that can make it too easy for some of the longer guys in the league to attack your chest plate like that. It could be tough for player. And he's a top heavy player. He's not a pear shaped guard that is what you more typically have been successful in the NFL.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are some limitations there, physical limitations clearly. But I think he could potentially be, you know, average starter if he fixes some of the technique things. You know, he's a big guy, strong guy, like he has some positives there. So we'll see. But I don't have high expectations, I'll put it that way. Tyler Linderbaum, we want to talk sure. about him.
So tough game for Linderbaum to finish the year. And he'd been playing great. I've been commenting recently on, you know, as additional data points have rolled in, that I'd be willing to go higher on the Tyler Linderbaum next contract. Now still not crazy about paying him, you know, full Creed Humphrey money, but I'm getting close, or I was getting close. He had a really tough game against the Steelers, and you think about who the Steelers are and how often the Ravens play them and the fact that they need to beat them. And, you know, he had a lot of trouble with Keanu Benton in this game in particular, but he made 38 out of 47 blocks, missed seven, which is a lot for a center to miss in a game. That's about two grade levels down just for those missed blocks. The pressures he allowed, only one as I scored. I saw PFF had him for three, which is interesting. And I meant to go to them today to ask about it, but I didn't get to it. He had a huge offensive holding penalty that was one of the big plays in the game. That's a very big deduction for me. I know that's not as big a deduction for PFF, so maybe it balances out in that sense. He scored 0.66 with an adjustment even of 0.06, which he did some good things dealing with a very tough Pittsburgh interior, including some Cam Hayward and a lot of Benton. It's still the highest point necessary for an F at center. So F plus, if you want to think about it that way, one more point, he would have had a D minus.
Quick question. If you took out the penalty, where would he have graded?
Okay. Yeah. So first of all, that not only cost him 5 points, it cost him an additional point for the missed block. So let me work on that. And if I give him 6 more points, he'd have been at 37. Because you're going to say it was a ticky-tack penalty, right?
To me, it was. I mean, that's just my perception on it. I don't think it was an egregious, like, horrible play by him. Maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe he wasn't completely thinking clearly there. But yeah. I feel like his overall performance wasn't to me an F in this game. But, you know, you're the grader. So
okay. So with that, it's actually a very big difference. So you have a C plus instead of an F. And it tells you just about how serious that play is. It's a 6-point difference on 47 plays. So he's right at the top of the C range, and he drops to right at the top of the F range from that thing, which is a full 2-grade drop. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was a very impactful play. So I'm not trying to whitewash it away, but mm-hmm. I my perception was that could have been a non-penalty. In which case, you know, maybe it's not such a terrible performance, but you know, it was called, so you know, the grade is what it is. You know, we talked about Voorhees a little bit next season, and there's gonna be a lot in the whole offseason. We'll talk about Linderbaum. You mentioned the potential contract. I think in the right offensive system, he could be an extremely good player. If they really dedicate, you know, to a kind of run blocking scheme, if they get athletic along the offensive line, I think it can be a really good offense with him as kind of the linchpin there. He's always going to have those deficiencies as a pass blocker. It's not going to be his best attribute, but you know, he has shown, you know, upside at times there as well. So I would like to bring him back. I kind of agree with you. I don't know if this is market top of the market contract, but I think he's in the top, like, you know, three to five center contracts. That's likely what he's going to be looking for at the minimum. So
yeah, it's unfortunate that we have one of the top centers in the division in Frazier. Who's just looks like a better player than Linderbaum already at this point. And that's just, it's just the way it is. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, the Steelers have done some good drafting along the offensive line in recent years. Falele?
Yeah, sure. Let's move on. 44 plays, 34 blocks. He missed 8 in this game, and no shortage of confusion, of, you know, kind of ponderousness in terms of movement. So if you're looking for memes, no problem getting there. What it's much harder to find is really impactful negative scoring from Falele in this game. So he did allow parts of 2 pressures, including the pressure that Lamar wriggled out of for the long touchdown pass, which was a thing of beauty, but two half pressures in the game. I think he was responsible for half of that, wasn't he?
Yes. He didn't block anybody on that play.
Yeah, I know. You're absolutely right. And so he scored 32 points in total, 0.73. Even with adjustment, that gets him up to a C-, fairly minimal adjustment. I don't like how he looks any more than the next guy does. In fact, I probably like it less, because I have to explain why my grade is different than what everybody wants to memeify or put into the single plays that they want to grade his whole season based on. And, you know, one of the things that just is tiresome on a week after week basis is hearing every single play is like that. Well, it's not. Nothing is like that in offensive line play. In fact, there's tremendous variation generally in game to game results as well. And you know, he got a C- in this game. It wasn't a bad performance at all relative to his own standard. Made 3 out of 4 pulls, which was something. He got into level 2. He didn't make a single level 2 block, and he's got a number of L2 NBs and whatnot on the sheet. So he went 0-for in level 2, 0-for level 2. He did have 1 pancake. They didn't have very many pancakes on the whole day. So, you know, it wasn't a terrible game. And if you signed me up at the beginning of the season for that, or if you asked me if I'd take it at the beginning of the season, I probably would have said no, because he finished last season so well. But by about week 5 or 6, I'd have said, you know what, sign me up for that C- for the rest of the year. And that would have been okay.
I think it's more of a frustration with just you call it the memification. It's just the plays where he just looks completely lost. And there's a handful of them every single game, it seems like, where he just doesn't know what he's doing, whether it's in pass blocking, he's not picking up the, you know, the rusher or the, you know, the twist or the stunt. He just doesn't seem to understand how to handle those types of things. Whether it's, you mentioned second level, inability to find and block at the second level is a consistent thing.
You'll find 1 per game, probably, at least there. And there have been times when there's been 5 in a game.
It just, to me, it looks like he doesn't like process well, like what's going on around him. And combined with some of the physical limitations in terms of his foot speed, it's just not a good, it's not a good combination. But in some contexts, you know, he can play all right. I don't think the Ravens will be bringing him back. I think they need to get better there, but I mean, we'll see. We've seen stranger things happen in the past.
Well, I mean, I don't think the Ravens are going to be able to afford to bring him back. I mean, this is a simple thing. I think there'll be a market for Falele, believe it or not, folks. And I think he's going to get signed to a contract that Ravens fans, first of all, Ravens fans are going to say no way in hell, but they're going to say the same thing they basically did when John Simpson got signed away, when he had all those penalties and there was a consistent problem. Simpson had a pretty good first year in New York. And then I talked to some of the New York guys who I'd been telling him what are the nature of the problems. His second year in New York was not nearly as good.
Okay. I did look up some of the stats that PFF has, and he actually led the Ravens in terms of pressures allowed, all offensive linemen, which isn't a great stat for a guard.
Led the most pressures by, as the way they show it. They do some double counting of pressures mm-hmm. there that I'm not in agreement with, but sure.
Okay. But I mean, in terms of pass blocking efficiency, definitely in the bottom third of the league there. So, I mean, there's not a lot to really latch onto as positives. So, subpar, below average, but he's not like the worst player in the league by any stretch. So, we can move to Roger Rosengarten, who I think is probably the most consistent player that we've had on the offensive line this season. I'd like to hear your kind of opinion on that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So he made 40 out of 47 blocks in this game, missed four, allowed half a pressure and one and a third quarterback hits. And one of those came to TJ Watt late. And was that the play that's the play he got off for the 26-yard play to Likely. Watt hit him from behind at the end of the play. So that was an unfortunate one, but at least it didn't end up losing the season for the Ravens, which it was desperately close to doing, or we would have been, blaming on him. But anyway, B minus game for Rosengarten. Overall, decent performance. He was facing TJ Watt. I didn't give him a full like TJ Watt like adjustment for his play because I think TJ Watt was playing a little bit hurt in this game.
Yeah. I don't think Watt was 100%. I mean, obviously he's been out for the past month with the punctured lung surgery recovery. So he's, probably physically not quite there, but still a very good edge defender, and he's got all the tricks in his playbook, so it's never an easy matchup against the Steelers edges.
So I'll move on to Emory Jones last, the last guy who we need to talk about. So he doesn't get a grade because he's out there for 13 plays, and he made a short entrance for Falele at right guard, and then he made an entrance at left guard to finish the game for Voorhees. Hopefully nothing is seriously wrong with Voorhees. It's going to last into next year. But Emory Jones made 10 of 13 blocks. Didn't have any negative events. 10 of 13, it's not enough to get a grade, but it'd be like 0.77 on those plays. So he would be a high C kind of performance from this game, if you wanted to look at that. Right on the CC plus border, probably. And, solid effort. He hadn't been this good before. And in his other trials, he had a holding call and one where he had some plays. But, if I had to guess, I'd say he's probably who they go with at right guard next year to start the year. They probably draft another guard or center. We'll see which. And a lot of that will depend on whether Linderbaum is still here next year. And they might draft another lineman as well, whether it's a swingman or or even a second interior guy, because they've cut loose Ben Cleveland as of a few days ago.
Yep.
So they have some spots to fill on this roster on the offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Linderbaum is the first domino, right? And what direction they go with him, it'll make a huge impact. And whether that means they try to sign another veteran, I don't even know who's available as a free agent at center aside from Linderbaum. Or if they just kind of look towards the draft and take multiple, attempts at the interior offensive line position, that might be the way they ended up going with it. But yeah, I think Jones is definitely going to be projected to be one of their starters. And he has a lot of, I think, upside. Just looking at his physical traits, I think he can be someone that you have some comfort level. And if you could take this game, you know, you set us a high C and project him that for next year, I think everybody would be pretty happy.
Oh, yeah, we'd be thrilled. I mean, the typical path of growth for a Ravens offensive lineman has been fairly steady through 4 years, and a lot of them just reached their, you know, their value as a starter in year four. Linderbaum, you know, is the highest round draft pick they've had in recent years at that position. It took him until year two to become good. And
every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
He was a really, really bad pass blocker as a rookie. I agree completely with you in terms of, you know, it's a process. That's also why I'm inclined to give Voorhees some additional leash. Not a lot. He wouldn't start next season with a whole lot of leash, but he's at least going to be a backup. And he's a guy who will compete for a spot. And if there's a rookie, and let's say it's a third or fourth round rookie, I don't think a rookie like that immediately gets a pass into the starting lineup over a player like Voorhees.
Yeah, I think it'd probably be, you know, the camp battle. Sure. And we'll see. I mean, obviously a new coaching staff, we'll see, you know, how much is taken into consideration in going to the next season. But I do think he'll be on the roster and given an opportunity.
You bring up a good point there. Obviously, with the firing of Harbaugh today, there's going to be major coaching changes across the staff. And I would guess that George Warhop is probably not going to be with the Ravens next year. Would that be your thought? And
I would certainly hope. I would hope so. I think he's not been a very good coach for the Ravens. You know, I think there's been regression at the along the offensive line for the most part. So he may not be like the main cause for all of that, but I would think that he's going to be, you know, looking for another job, or maybe he retires. He's yeah. been around for a long time.
Yeah, that's part of it. Is it's just time from that perspective, and it's also, it's an opportunity for the Ravens with the new coach to bring in an offensive line coach. And a lot of those guys, we've talked about that before on this show, they're offensive line coaches for life. They're not looking to be offensive coordinators or head coaches. They are like a lot of E8 and E9 sergeants in the military. They're not looking to get bumped up to lieutenant for their next jobs. Anyway, the very experienced guys often, and you can hire an older guy if you need to. And when I say that, I mean maybe a guy in his 50s. I would love it if they could get the next dynastic offensive line hire and hold him for a long time because it's not an area of cap constraint. And we saw today with all the dollars that, John Harbaugh is going to walk out the door with, the cap constraint on coaches is not a significant concern. The dollars
absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll see. I mean, if we get, an offensive minded head coach, then maybe he has, his whole offensive staff potentially already picked out. And it could be a young guy, and if they're successful, they could be around for a very long time. I mean, that's obviously kind of the goal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I want a dynasty out of it. I want a dynastic, 20-year offensive line coach if we can get it. Gabe, this is a part of the show where we talk about some skill position players. So who would you like to talk about first?
Mentioned him briefly, I think in the first half, but Isaiah Likely, I wanted to bring up possibly likely that this is his last game as a Raven. It's hard to see. I mean, it's possible that they bring him back, but I think the tea leaves were kind of written when Andrews got the extension. So, his tenure as a Raven has been a mixed bag. I think I feel like there's been significant highs and also kind of lows too. Not just looking at specific plays, but just I feel like he never reached his potential in the Ravens offense for whatever reason. I think in the right offensive system, he may be able to do that. But in this game specifically, he made the one play that mattered the most, gave him the opportunity to win the game. When kind of all the opportunities seemed to be there running away. And that was one of the most impressive plays I think any Ravens receivers made this season, past several seasons, I would say. Just like incredibly athletic ability to hold on to the ball, fully extended with two defenders. I honestly didn't think he got it at first. I was shocked when I saw that it was a reception. And I just went to, just shout out that play. And just it's been fun to watch him. He's had that knack to make the big plays in clutch times. And that's been a fun part of the Ravens offense the past couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I've liked him a lot of the time as a run blocker as well. And he hasn't been perfect by any stretch, but he's been a guy I think that's helped the Ravens, being a guy who can crack back from the slot, go take care of sealing a linebacker or whoever's needed on the edge of that defense and allow the Ravens to do some running outside. It takes guys who can block from that spot, from particularly that slot spot there, if you're going to run a lot of wide plays like that. If you want to play, use the area between the edge and the boundary to run against, you can't do it without good players like Isaiah Likely. You can try and do it with a Ricard, and that'll get you part of it. But Isaiah Likely also has the nice foot speed and the nice ability to stay upright and move his feet and position his body properly to take on a level 2 or 3 defender that I really like. So he's been a very valuable player for the Ravens. And he's at 8.1, 8.2 yards per target, whatever he's been in his Ravens career, might be 8.5 even. He's at 12 touchdowns the last 3 years. I mean, just been a very steady player. He always seems to be on the end of extended plays to Lamar.
Yeah, and that was the thing that I was going to mention just to kind of wrap it up was, it seemed within structure, he never was really utilized. And whether that's by scheme or by just his ability to, get open within structure. But when it came to those extended plays to Lamar making his magic happen, he seemed to be on the same page with Lamar almost every single time. And he was on the receiving end of a number of spectacular Lamar plays. So if he does end up going somewhere else, those types of plays will probably be missed.
Lamar will have to reestablish that magic with some other receivers, including Bateman, who had a lost year this year. But I think he'll be back. I think he'll. I don't think the Ravens are going to give up on value in that contract. But the value in the contract is definitely not as much as they thought it was. It's still an incredibly cheap contract he signed, and unfortunately, that's the kind of year he turned in this year. This was not special. All right, I want to talk about Walker, I think, a little bit. He had a big penalty in this game, so let's get the bad news out of the way first that helped stall a drive. It wasn't the sole reason because they were already at 2nd and 11, but it made it 2nd and 16, and then the Ravens couldn't dig themselves out of that hole. Walker, of course, on the 4th-and-3 play early in the game, Had a deep cross and caught the ball, totally blasted by Ramsey. I couldn't believe the space that accrued just almost instantaneously between him and Ramsey. And Collinsworth kind of showed it and was chalkboarding it and whatnot, saying, this is the point where Jalen Ramsey knew it was gone. Well, you know, Collinsworth has the advantage of knowing what happened from the play. He's also a receiver. I mean, he knows what's going to happen when they're in that relative position. And all of a sudden, he's 5 yards away from him. And, you know, Ramsey has lost him completely. And then I thought it was nice that on the final drive of the game, he went to him for that 8-yard throw towards the left sideline on the out. I mean, it's probably be a good thing for the Ravens that maybe they need a player like DeAndre Hopkins again. But I think it would be better almost if they didn't have him. They just kind of let Tez develop a little bit more next year.
He's an interesting player. He definitely took a big leap, I think, in kind of his overall ability on the field from his rookie year. The speed is obvious. Whether he can develop kind of the route running, and then, like you said, his opportunity. Will he be given that opportunity to be a third receiver for them? It's tough, and you, obviously you also mentioned Peyton kind of having a lost year with between the injuries and just kind of inability to get integrated into the offense. And I have a quick thought on that. I think a lot of it, if we look at last year, he was a deep threat for the Ravens. Mm-hmm. This year, between Lamar's injuries and the offensive line, they weren't able to connect on a lot of deep plays. They just didn't have the ability to let those plays develop. And he just didn't have that opportunity to make those plays that I haven't done the deep dive on the data, but I imagine the number of deep targets he got this year was almost zero.
I'd have to look back. That I bet his A dot was actually pretty good, and I haven't looked at it, but he had two plays in one game where he's probably 30 yards downfield both times, and one was whistled high, and it was against Cincinnati in the loss at home on Thanksgiving. Dax Hill caught up to him because Lamar badly underthrew the ball. Yeah, so see, he had two deep shots that game. I'll look up his A dot, and you pick your next player.
I'm gonna just go to the wide receiver here with Zay Flowers. I think best game he's had as a Raven, to me at least. I mean, he didn't have a lot of catches. He had one that you might consider a drop earlier on, but those two deep passes were, you know, really showing what he can do downfield. If he's shown the ability throughout his career to generate separation. It's kind of been the little things with Zay that he hasn't quite kind of all put together. And some of the weird things he does after the catch, ball security issues. But if you can unlock him like he was unlocked in this game, he could be a dynamic player for the Ravens. I mean, his performance on the season, 1,200 yards, I think, receiving. Yep. One of the best receiving years ever for a Ravens wide receiver. And it's kind of gone under the radar, but really impressive from him.
A lot of it was just from this last game, but he got up to 10.3 yards per target for the year, which puts him in rarefied air. There's only been, I think it's only been four receivers who've been in the ballpark, and he's either number two, three, or four all time. Number one was last year Bateman at 10.5. That's forgotten. People, you know, want to bash Bateman to hell, like a whack-a-mole or whatever right now. But the three other guys who've been in the 10.3 range are Derek Alexander, Jermaine Lewis in his big year with Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh, quarterback, and Zay Flowers this year. So those are the three. And obviously he's doing it with a high volume total too. So very effective. And Zay Flowers, he was hurt a lot in terms of the impact of his plays and the distance from line of scrimmage. He's catching the ball, and that's obviously going to cut into his yardage when Huntley or Rush was in the game. So it was a very good year for Zay Flowers.
Yeah. And I'm still not sure if he profiles as a true, you know, wide receiver one, just due to some of his size limitations, his inability to like kind of win contested catches. But he's still an electric player when he gets the ball. And he, as I mentioned, the separation is really, really strong from him. He's a really good route runner. And if he can just kind of put it together a little bit more, I think he has another level to kind of get to as a receiver.
Okay, I'm trying to see if he's in the top of the league, but the very highest average targeted air yards was 19.1 in the league by Alec Pierce. And he didn't have enough total targets to get there. I'm talking about Devontae Walker. But his ADOT this year, let me get this right, 27.0. Now, last year it was 34.0. So it's 28.4 career, which is amazing. The problem is it's only 10 targets. It's not a lot to go on. So if you missed some deep targets, it's understandable. That 8-yard target that he had at the end of the game must have been one of his shortest whole year.
Yeah, probably. Right? Yeah. I mean, he had two touchdowns in one game last year, right? Yeah. Was that last year?
It was this year earlier, right?
It was this year. It was this year. And then last year he had one touchdown, one target. So yeah. He's been definitely a deep threat. And Bateman just hasn't been on the field enough this year to really consider anything, I think.
All right. So you took Flowers. Let's talk about Keaton Mitchell. Is kind of interesting case here right now. So let's hit on him real quick. He'll be a RFA. I'm not sure there's an easy contract to give Keaton Mitchell right now. I don't think they really want to tender him. The tender is not guaranteed. So they could, if they don't like where he is, it doesn't look as explosive as they thought in camp, they can tender him, sign him, and then still cut him if they want to. And they've done that with offensive linemen in the past when they've tendered them in their fourth year. They've reduced their salaries before the year started. And I think two guys, might have been Jensen and Hurst, were in the league on the same like year path. I think those two guys both got cut down to like just over $1 million after they'd been signed their tenders at 2-point-something million. So I know they were kind of upset about that. But Mitchell's a guy, it's not obvious that he re-signs with the Ravens, even though I really want him back. Boy, is he a difference maker.
I saw a stat about just the speed, you know, the number of 20 mile per hour. And he led the league this year and times he achieved 20 miles per hour. So the speed is there. I feel like the size is always going to limit his kind of impact on an offensive game plan. He's not somebody who can really touch the ball probably more than 10 to 12 times at most. Because he's just not just the fact that he might get injured, but there's some plays that you really can't use him for. You know, short yardage stuff.
Anything where you might need a pass blocker.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of limitations with him. I would agree with you. I'd like to see him back. I don't know how they handle it because, like you said, the tender isn't cheap anymore, and it's maybe you can get him on like a 2-year type deal where it's a little bit under that. I'd be interested in something like that.
Anybody else we just need to talk about tonight?
Real quick, we talked about him quite a bit, but just to shout out Derrick Henry again, he had a really strong year. Second, almost won the rushing crown, which I don't think most people would have given him a shot at, you know, a month ago. Really strong performance down the stretch. Should have had more yards. Some of them got taken away by that bogus Zay Flowers penalty. So maybe if he had those yards, he would have actually made the cracked the list. Unfortunately, that penalty didn't end up, you know, impacting the score at all. But shows that ability to, if he gets past the, you know, that first line of defense, there's a good chance he might take it 30, 40 yards or take to the house. It's a rare ability. Not every running back can do that. There's no reason to think that he's going to be completely falling off next year. I think there's some areas of decline, as we mentioned, but I think if the offensive line gets better, if Lamar Jackson is healthier, I think we could see a year that's more similar to 2024 than 2025.
I think that's possible. I think it's also possible we'll see additional decline due to age, and I wouldn't be shocked by that. I think I'd sign up immediately for the 2025 season again. I don't think without hesitation, I would do that. There's always a risk that, you know, there's going to be injuries that hit him at some particular point, and then that's going to be the end of the line for him as a Raven. It's probably kind of a crossroads year for him to determine how long he's going to play in this league. He could be a guy who plays as long as Frank Gore, potentially, you know, in his very late 30s. If he, you know, it still hasn't lost anything next year. If he has lost something, if all of a sudden injuries get to him and then he's not the same back after that, his career is going to be over like that. I still kind of believe that, but you know, he's Derrick Henry. He's going to get one more chance beyond the next injury, probably somewhere.
Yeah, I think if there is a significant injury, I agree with you, but he's been remarkably injury resistant throughout his career. I mean, you look at his training regimen, you look at the way he maintains his body. I mean, he seems to be one of those kind of just rare athletes that is able to play at a elite level beyond what the average one, kind of like, you know, a LeBron James type kind of.
LeBron James is a good one. I was thinking Nolan Ryan for baseball is a guy who could still be one of the hardest throwers in the game in his mid 40s. You know, it's like that. It's just, this doesn't make any sense anymore. But he's remarkable durability and you know, we just have to, I want to ride this as long as it will go. And it looks like entering 2026, I'm thrilled that Derrick Henry is still the primary running back for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Let's move on. I think we answered the big mailbag question we had, and we don't honestly have time for more, but I did want to hit on maybe if you want to go through any other coaches you think are likely gone with Harbaugh. And I guess you mentioned you think Warhop will be gone, and I do too.
I tend to lean towards the majority of the coaches being gone. And we'll see that tends to be what happens when, you know, there's a new coaching staff when the head coach goes, unless there's kind of like a standout kind of person that you obviously see as being, someone you want to maintain. And then maybe there are a couple, you know, defensive coaches like a Chuck Smith. I don't know how many people you'd want to really maintain off his coaching staff. I like
Randy Brown, I would say is a keeper. I hope that they'll be able to keep him. The kicking coach he's the guy in the league for going out and scouting kickers.
I like Todd Monken. You know, I've heard that there's a lot of potential issues with him staying, and it seems like it's not going to happen. I feel like he's had kind of a rough year, but the past 2 years, you know, he had basically the best offense in the league 2 years in a row. I think he kind of worked with some scraps this year and made a lot of good things happen still. But it seems like he's likely out the door, that's pretty much it. I think it's going to be a pretty large turnover.
Okay. I'm not as down on Zach Orr as everybody else seems to be. I think he actually worked very well with some extremely adverse conditions on the defense this year. I do think the Ravens are going through a metamorphosis this year. Roquan did not have a good last game. It's too bad because he was really having a good season. And Marlon Humphrey not only didn't have a good game in the last game, I'd say, with a couple of missed tackles, but it almost imperils his ability to move to safety, which I think is the obvious choice for him. It makes so much sense for him to move to safety with all the flexibility it brings. So I kind of hope they do that. One guy I kind of think that the Ravens will cut loose almost certainly is Pagano. I don't know that the new guy will want him, but I also am not happy with what happened with the secondary this year. And, you know, if you bring in a guy like that for oversight and things are still kind of going wrong with busted coverages and whatnot, it's not a good look.
Yeah, it wasn't the improved secondary that I thought we'd see. There was moments where I thought they were, you know, trending in the right direction, and that may have just been competition kind of thing. I agree with Marlon Humphrey. I think he's on the downside of his career. I don't think he can play cornerback in the league anymore. And if he can't tackle, it's not going to be really a safety transition that's going to come naturally. So we'll see. I mean, Kyle Hamilton kind of covered a lot of ills for this team.
Right. So absolutely.
I think you pair him. Obviously, you have Nate Wiggins, who's kind of had some flashes, but then regressed a little bit too. I'd be willing to just kind of like turn over a new leaf with both the coaching staff and some of the personnel.
Yeah. Where's the highest you're willing to go in the draft on an interior offensive lineman?
I mean, it always depends on what other players are there, right?
Are you willing? They got the 14th overall pick. Are you willing to spend that on an offensive lineman?
I would if there isn't an obvious selection that's defensive edge. Okay. So I think those positions are a little bit higher importance. But if there isn't somebody that you like absolutely love at that position, and there's, you know, somebody you grade as a top 10 interior offensive lineman, those players do exist. They've been come out of the draft and they've been very impactful in a lot of ways. I think you can take an offensive lineman from the interior there. It's probably a little bit richer than I'd like to see, but if you feel strongly about it, it's not a complete no for me.
It has to be that, to me, almost a generational guard to do that, because for you lose all the fifth-year option friction. And we've seen already what a pain that's been with Linderbaum. We haven't gotten to the actual pain point, but it's already been a pain in terms of trying to figure out what the guy's worth and what the Ravens had to do in terms of differentiating between their two first-round picks that year. They paid the right guy. There's no two ways about it. But Linderbaum's not happy about it. He should be, you know, in terms of how the system works, not in terms of how the Ravens treated him. I think he understands that. But yeah. All right. Well, I'm probably less excited about going IOL with the first pick. And I think most fans are really underrating the need at corner right now. The Ravens have a very old corner room. And particularly if Humphrey moves to safety, which I think is going to be necessitated, it won't be a matter of there's really a choice to keep him at corner. He's the lowest graded corner by PFF across the entire league. There just doesn't seem to be another choice. Owuzie is probably going to go somewhere else and make some money. Don't know that. Maybe the Ravens can find a way to re-sign him. And then I think they need to have developmental corners anyway to start the process with again. Coney and Longerbeam will be there at camp next year, but both of them are real question marks. They were 6th-round picks to start with, but they're question marks ending year two.
Yeah, and I kind of agree that cornerback is a kind of a overshadowed need on the team. And if that player is there, and you're looking at offensive lineman, interior offensive lineman, and a corner, I'll go corner every single time.
Gabe, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You can find me on Twitter at Gabe Fergie. Looking forward to the off-season discussions, coaching discussions, you know, draft, all of that. Free agency. We're looking at a potential big contract extension for Lamar Jackson. It's something I think is probably going to happen now, especially with the coaching change. So that's going to free up some cap room for the Ravens to be able to, you know, sign potentially some of their players. Also, maybe look at some external free agents as well.
Should be very exciting. And as folks, as we move into the offseason, keep sending questions to hashtag film study mailbag. You can try and decide what show you want them on, or ask if I'll do a video on it. I got lots of time to do that right now. First series we're going to be doing is the review shows by position, which really look at each position, the players there, how do they perform this year, and what would we do entering next year. So hopefully if you have questions about that, that's the first place you can hit us up. I'll make sure they get on the right show. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.